This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your desktop or mobile device. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. Also, help us keep Star Trek discussion coming to you each day by becoming a Trek FM patron through Patreon. Get access to exclusive content and become part of the team. You'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
This is J.G. Hertz, the General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he is every show, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, I heard you're planning a big party in your quarters. Maybe like 200 people are going to come over.
Only if people don't smile, Chris. They're just not allowed to smile or
what about
really
laughing?
Have any
I guess no laughing either,
fun?
Right?
Yeah, no laughing.
Okay.
Problem is that Worf gets really disappointed and frustrated when we just have, you know, huge party with so many people laughing and smiling and all. So,
but Matthew, I have an idea that's going to make everything much better for Worf. What if everyone comes dressed as their favorite Klingon?
You were so close, Chris. Worf just texted and he does not like that idea.
Okay. All right. So, of course, this is the wonderful opening to Wrongs Darker Than Death or Night. And it starts you off thinking that that episode is going to be this really fun episode, and then it takes a very serious twist. And that's the episode we're going to talk about today on The Orb, although we're going to talk about more of a specific part of that episode, and that's Kira's mother, Kira Maru.
Well, Chris, it's a really interesting thing because, rewatching the episode just to kind of get myself in the framework for what we were going to talk about, I was actually surprised at how short the time is that we have with Kira Maru.
Yeah.
And yet how I think impactful it is. And, you know, just from what we get in the episode, you can tell her background. She's married, she has three kids, and for her, the only thing that really matters is taking care of those kids and making sure that they're safe. And so, you know, just as I think a background for her, immediately I'm struck by that this woman is a good mother. Like that's one of the strongest things that comes out to me. And I thought it was really interesting to see and to be able to get just a small glimpse into a part of Kira's life that, you know, Kira Nerys, that she can't really remember, because you don't really remember being four.
Yeah, well, she said she was three when her mother was taken away.
Yeah, so you just don't remember that time frame.
I don't remember really anything from when I was three.
Yeah, to see, though, that Nerys has such a mother who's dedicated to the survival of her family.
Yeah. So that happens early in the episode, and the setup is that Kira gets a message from Gul Dukat, and Gul Dukat says, "Your mother and I were lovers." Kira doesn't believe him, of course, and then she goes and she uses the Orb of Time to go back to that point so she can observe firsthand what is going on. And Matthew, that raises another thing that we'll talk about along the way today, which is the impact that seeing her mother firsthand had on Kira, the character that we've known up to this point, as well as what she becomes for the rest of the series. Now, this episode takes place in the sixth season, so Kira is already very, very well established as a character. And part of what this story does, I think, is to challenge the foundation upon which Kira has built her life and her goals in life. And it also plays into her reading of Gol Dukat and his intentions. And she goes back to a time where, at least on a surface level, we see some very different attitude or intentions from Gol Dukat, which is another thing that we'll talk about today. But in terms of setting Kira's life on course, when you think back to that moment when her mother was ripped away, Kira may not have memories of it happening, but the fact that her mother was gone certainly influenced how she grew up from that point forward. So what are your thoughts on how that event set her life on course?
Well, I think anytime that a child has their parent ripped away from them, even if it's before they can remember him, the effect of them not being there is going to be felt. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, Kira Nerys loses her mother very early, and then she'll lose her father pretty early in her life as well. And so the trauma of for her, you know, having the Cardassians take both of her parents away from her, be responsible for both of her parents' deaths, really, is a burden and an anger that Kira will carry around for a very long time. And it's that anger with which we kind of see the entire series of Deep Space Nine slowly chip away at, you know, and that anger slowly dissolves from hating every single Cardassian to just kind of being pissed off at a few choice Cardassians for good reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kara goes from being basically a racist to somebody who's not. And the struggle that it takes for her to get there. I mean, the setting of Kira's life course here is one of setting course for hate immediately because of what she's raised in. And who can blame her for having both parents ripped away from her by an enemy that is not only doing that to her, but the entire Bajoran race?
Yeah. But the fact that the Cardassians are enslaving the Bajorans as a race is one thing that would drive someone like Kira and other Bajorans in the resistance to fight against the Cardassians to liberate their people. That's, of course, very understandable. Add to that the belief that Kira had that the Cardassians had killed her mother, that her mother had died in a camp protecting her family, and then, of course, her father is killed as well. That adds another dimension to Kira's hatred of Cardassians and her lifelong goal up to the point when she came aboard the station of fighting against the Cardassians as a terrorist. If she had known that her mother didn't die in a camp protecting her family, but instead lived aboard the station for 7 years, and in particular, if she had known that her mother actually felt that she was making a sacrifice, but doing it to provide for her family. So I'm thinking back to the end of the episode after she plants the bomb and she sees her father's message to her mother and she sees her mother crying and she realizes that her mother actually does miss the family and that this is a sacrifice for her. Do you think that that would have changed the course of Kira's life and her mission to drive away the Cardassians in any way?
I think it actually would have just continued to galvanize Kira with the resolve to destroy all Cardassians and to get them off Bajor as quick as possible, because she would have seen her mother as even more of a hero than she probably did. You know, for her, her mother just dies in a labor camp, you know, and so that creates an anger in Kira about that. But I think seeing her mother as an actual hero, you know, somebody that did her own type of sacrifice for her own family in the only way that she could, given the situation, I think would have really set Kira on the same course and maybe even with a more intense fire, if that's even possible.
Do you think she would have seen her as a hero? This was another interesting thing for me is, well, there's not enough time for her to digest what has happened and really think about it, right? But when she has that conversation with Susko at the end of this episode, like, I'm feeling that after she sees that message that I just spoke about, and she sees her mother, and she decides to save her mother's life and Dukat's life, that she might, as you say, see her mother as a sort of hero that sacrificed for the family. But I'm not sure she really got there, certainly not in the episode. When she's talking to Susko, she says, there's a part of me that wishes that I hadn't saved her life. I think that she still sees her mother as a traitor or a collaborator.
This is the hard thing about this episode, I think, is that it is definitely ambiguous, and it's left up to the viewer to decide. But watching carefully the episode, I feel like that Maru never truly is into the relationship with Dukat.
Sure.
She's playing the part, yeah. And that's what you see. I mean, when they kiss, she is not really into it. You know, it feels like she's playing the part, because what else is she supposed to do? I mean, is she just supposed to commit suicide at this point? That doesn't help her family.
Right.
And I think that especially the moment that Maru knows that her family is actually being taken care of better because of the message that she gets, she is a little bit more willing to play the part, because she realizes she's doing the only thing she can do mm-hmm. to take care of her family. And I think Kira realizes that too. And what Kira is frustrated about at the end of this episode is more that this has to change her view on what it means to be a collaborator, because now she can't just put everybody in that camp and say, mm-hmm. oh, well, they were a collaborator, and
that's
feel
a good point.
Vindicated by it. You yeah. know, like the guy who's being a jerk, the Bajoran who's working and runs
oh, God.
This harem.
He's terrible.
I mean, that guy, yeah, now that guy is the kind of collaborator that, I mean, he is enjoying
yes.
his sense of power and place that he's in.
Oh, he's on a
these
power trip.
Women,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, these women are basically sex slaves.
Yep.
You know, if they don't perform, if they don't do what they're supposed to do, they just get thrown out, and whoever is attached to them probably gets the same treatment. So they don't have a choice. They really don't. And therefore, I think that's the struggle that Kira is coming to, because now she has to deal with that. But not only that, on top of all of that, the cherry on top is that Dukat slept with her mom.
Yeah.
And we all know how Kira feels about Dukat and how Dukat feels about Kira. And if that doesn't give you the willies, I don't know what should. I mean, that's just disgusting.
Well, and that Dukat's going after the daughter of his former lover, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So,
I mean, it's, oh gosh, it just starts to sound like a really bad, scary,
He's a real creeper, for sure. I mean, what are you going to say?
I think that's the understatement of the century.
I know, right? What are you going to say? He's a creeper of galactic proportions, Matthew.
I think you just named the show.
But about Kira Maru, so another thing that I think about this story is that of all the DS9 episodes, this has to be amongst a handful that could really, really benefit from being a novel where you had time
yeah.
to tell a story, because this story really needs room to breathe. And for us to really understand Kira Maru, why she did the things that she did, and for it to make sense on a realistic time scale, including how Nerys interprets it, you really need to be able to tell the story over the course of 7 years, right? Because you said a moment ago that you don't think that Meru was ever really into the relationship with Dukat. And yeah, absolutely, because it's not even really a question whether in the longer term was she into Dukat, but this story takes place over the span of only a few weeks. So over the course of a few weeks, she's been thrown in with this man that she has never known at all before, and she's been ripped away from her husband and her children. And it makes it a little bit hard for me to really say what I think about her choices and how she coped with the situation, because when I watched the episode, I feel that Meru isn't acting like a mother of three children who has just been ripped away from her husband and her children. It's like she seems too comfortable with the situation. She seems not to be disturbed by what's happening. And it's only when she receives that message from her husband and she starts crying that you feel like she's letting something out. But I think that the reason for this is because to expedite the storytelling for a 45-minute episode of Star Trek, you can't really delve into those feelings sufficiently.
Well, and I think that the thing is that those are more internal things too. You know, those would be the kind of things in a book where you would be inside the character's head.
Right, right, right.
But even expressions, I think you would
expect to be able to tell reading someone's face that there's something more going on there.
The scene that I would point us to then is the scene where Dukat kisses her in front of Nerisse for the first time, and you can tell on her face, she's not enjoying this.
Yeah.
And she doesn't want to be kissing him, but she's going to play the part. And so that little tiny window into what happened kind of let me know that she's playing the role. And she's afraid for her life. She's afraid for her kid's life. And she knows if she doesn't perform, it's not good for anyone. Mm. And I think the reason that she's not more like fearful or anything is you have to remember she's not Nerisse. You know, she doesn't have that fiery temper. You know, she doesn't know that they're going to win the occupation. She's just a woman who has spent her life trying to keep her family alive and herself alive. And she doesn't have any of that benefit of hindsight that Nerisse does, that they're going to win, that it's going to be okay, and that we should be all self-righteous about how awesome we were that we won and that we didn't collaborate. You know, like, there's none of that in here. So what I think we're getting to see is actually the picture of what it was like for more normal Bajoran people who had to struggle with day in and day out dealing with the Cardassians that weren't, you know, the resistance fighters. They were just trying to survive, you know, and
well, this is a perfect
survival rings out of you a lot of life, you know, especially when you're surviving in a time like this. So, and it rings out of you, I think, a lot of self-righteousness and superiority and anything remotely connected to the type of person that Kira Nerisse is.
Yeah. Well, it connects you more with reality as opposed to sort of an academic view of a situation.
Right. I mean, there's no high lofty ideals going on here.
It's really just survive
to
the next day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
This is a situation where we see a lot these days, and we see it a lot with people discussing Star Trek, of looking at things in hindsight, looking at it from our position and not considering, when you talk about characters, not actually considering the situation that they are in the story, and also looking at writing, not considering what was happening at the time that something was written, right? And so here I speak specifically about character. Like, you and I can't sit here and really judge how Kiramiru should have reacted in a situation like that, because we've never been in a situation like that, right? And when you say that she is a good mother, some people might look at this and say, well, no, she's not a good mother. She didn't fight at all to try to get back to her children. But as you said a moment ago, she realized in the moment that the best way for her to make sure that her children are taken care of is to go along with the situation that has presented itself, because it's a terrible situation and no one wants to see women put in that situation. But in a time of war, this is a situation that did present itself to her as an opportunity, and she ended up in a better situation than the other women that were taken aboard the station, because she caught the eye of Dukat. And while it's a terrible thing that happened, and we, like Kira, can say she shouldn't have gone along with this, just staying within the story, staying within Kiramiru's mind, what was going on at that moment in time and whether her decision was right for her or not, as Sisko says at the end of the episode, that it was her decision to make, I can at least see from her perspective where maybe this was, in her mind, the right decision to make. And if she hadn't made it, Kira Nerys may have never grown up.
Well, and that's one of the things that I think is so interesting here, is that I think Nerys has a whole new perspective on her own life, in the sense that realizing how close maybe she came to not existing.
Right.
And thinking about this in the sense that, or not continuing to exist, I mean, she was already born, but thinking about the idea that her life was saved by the act of what she would have considered at the time of being in the resistance, and maybe even before this whole thing started with the Orb of Time, a collaborative move. But now she has to kind of go back and reorganize all of those thoughts in the light of everything that she knows, and it, her whole worldview has been changed. Her whole idea of what she thought was right and wrong about those things changed, because she has a better understanding of what those situations were actually like. And maybe she's even a little bit less judgmental of all people. And I think that's what's so interesting. And I think it actually will play out, because Kira, I think, becomes less and less judgmental throughout the entire series. And of course, till you get to the very end, where she's helping the Cardassians fight their own resistance.
Yeah.
And she was fighting the resistance long before Princess Leia. So, I love, though, that this is just another stepping stone for Kira to grow and to change and to move. And what's great about Kira as a character here is that instead of just being somebody who would be angry about what she found out and reject it outright and just not want to think about it, Kira's trying to process, and you're just mm-hmm. seeing that growth here. And her mother, I think, is having a huge impact on Kira's life even now by finding out this new information.
Yeah, absolutely. I still come back to the question of whether or not Kiramiru is a collaborator, or is she something else? Is she a traitor to the Bajoran people? A collaborator, like you said earlier, this guy, Basso, he's a collaborator. But Kiramiru's not jointly working with the Cardassians to enslave the Bajoran people. However, her presence in Dukat's quarters, her affair relationship with Dukat, it is sort of an approval on her part that what the Cardassians are doing is acceptable on some level, right? Because in Kira's eyes, she's not fighting back. She's going along with it. So I don't see her as a collaborator per se, but I can certainly see where she would be viewed as a traitor by the Bajorans.
Well, yeah, I mean, Nerys sees her as sleeping with the enemy.
Yeah.
you know, and I think, though, the difference here, let's put it in historical context. Okay, just having rewatched A Band of Brothers, I showed it to my wife for her first time, and when they arrive in Holland and they're liberating some of those towns, once the Americans get there, it's a big party, but also they round up the men who collaborated with the Germans and they shoot them, and they round up the women who collaborated or slept with the Germans and they shave their heads. You know, so they see it as, you know, you took advantage of this situation, and yeah, you didn't resist, you didn't fight back. I think the situation, though, here is very different, because they're forcibly being removed from their homes, put in a new place, and said, do this or we'll kill you and get somebody else, and if you have any family, we'll kill them too. So I think the situation here, especially with where we are with Maru, is not only is she able to keep herself safe, she's able to keep her family and her children safe. And so she's willing to sacrifice her own body. That's what she's doing. She's making the sacrifice of her own body to be violated over and over again by a Cardassian dictator so that her family can live. I don't see that as being collaborative or anything like that. I just don't think she has a choice other than suicide, which would also probably mean the death of her family as well.
Exactly.
And that's not helpful.
That's an important point, because some people listening, and I always try to put myself in various different shoes and see things from different angles, some people listening might say, well, in that situation, you should maybe not commit suicide, but you should fight back, and if you're killed in the process, so be it. If you don't, then you are a collaborator, but she has a family to think about, right? And if she were to fight back, which of course would be Nerissa's initial instinct, which is what she does in the caves when she first fights back against those Bajorans who are trying to take the soup, then she's not only sacrificing herself, but she is sacrificing her husband and her three children, because you know, without a doubt, that they would have been killed by the Cardassians as a punishment for her actions. So she would have died and her family would have died. I have no doubt that that's what would have happened under those circumstances.
Well, and I think what we see in the episode, just what we see, I think, is a woman who's putting on a brave face to do what she needs to do so that her family can be safe. I don't think she's really enjoying it, other than the fact that she probably does enjoy being clean.
Yeah.
And I'm sure she enjoys the fact that she has food to eat.
I think she's more in shock than anything.
And yes, but it's not like I think she's enjoying being Dukat's plaything.
No. No.
So,
and I think Kira Nerys, we have to use first names here, right? Nerys thinks that she is for a while, then realizes at the end that she's not.
And I think that's why, you know, Kira does what she does, which is to save her mother, because by saving her mother and Dukat, she's realizing, my mom probably kept me alive.
Yeah.
You know, I think this is a really interesting thing. And so, no, I don't think that Maru is a collaborator. I think she is actually, with the situation that she was in, she was a brave and heroic woman, and I think that's what Kira will come to later on when some of the anger subsides. Part of this, though, has to do with the fact that Dukat has found a way to insert himself underneath Kira's skin again, like to just dig in under her skin in a way that truly makes Kira's skin crawl.
So on that point, final thing to touch on today, do you think that seeing Dukat firsthand interacting during this time period, interacting with her mother, did this change Kira's perception of Dukat in any way? Nerissa's perception of Dukat?
I think that her perception of Dukat just became more legitimate in the sense that she's seen this man consistently use people for his own advantage. And I think we could add this to the discussion of whether or not Dukat actually loves his daughter. Because I think this goes a long way in showing that Dukat doesn't love anybody. Dukat just likes people to play along with him in his psychotic head games. Because apparently he's done this before with other women to...
Yeah, well, that's what the legate tells Kira when they're sitting there.
Exactly.
He quotes the line before Dukat even says it, right?
So I think for Kira, this maybe just completely sets in her mind who Dukat is. And even she will sometimes be fooled by his charms, as we do see in the sixth season. We saw that at the beginning of the sixth season with Sial and being on the station with them. And so I think this just ferments for her once and for all that this guy is non-redeemable. He's just awful.
And we know, going all the way back to things past, that Dukat has this history of bringing Bajoran women in and getting close to them. That's what we saw when Jadzia's there and she decides that her name is Lita. But we know that this is a history that he has anyway.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think, you know, I was reading something the other day that Flannery O'Connor said, and it kind of goes towards the end of this conversation, but this idea that the truth does not change according to our ability to stomach it. And I think this is a very tough truth for Kira to stomach. And yet, as disgusting as it is for her to think about her mother and Dukat, I think it does wonders for who she'll believe her mother to be down the line. And
yeah, true.
So in the end, was the truth liberating? Yes and no. So... I think it's a really interesting thing here, just how the truth works. The truth is the truth. You can't bend it. I mean, you can try and bend it or shake it or any way you want to make it, but it remains the same whether you like it or not. And so this is a tough one to deal with, but I love the way that the episode ends because I feel like Kira is on the road to recovery.
Well, my final thought on Kira Maru's story here is that it's a shame that we only got 45 minutes to explore it. I think that it would be wonderful, and I know she's been touched on, I believe, in the books, but a story that really focused in depth, and I'm thinking not even like your typical Star Trek book, but like a real thick science fiction novel, that kind of story where you've got, 500, 600 pages to really explore someone in depth would be wonderful for Kira Maru in this situation and how it affected Kira Nerisse. And there's a lot here. And this story, it's very tough to watch, right? Because it's subject matter that it's very unpleasant what's happening. If you're someone who, like me, has, in a different context, but has a history with their mother and the relationship with their mother, it's moving to watch on different levels. So anyway, it's a good story. It's an interesting story. It's a family member of a main cast member explored in a very different way than we have normally seen on Star Trek.
Yeah, no, I like the fact that we got to actually see her as a character, and I thought that this was a really interesting way to continue the character growth for her daughter, and it turns out to be something really fascinating, and I'm with you. This would be fantastic in a larger novel context. And in fact, the same way that Una McCormick did a follow-up to In the Pale Moonlight, I would love to see a novel set during the sixth season later on with Kira dealing with these, repercussions, and maybe somehow adding in Kira doing some more digging or whatever into her mother and being able to maybe find out more about what happened. Yeah. So it'd be fantastic.
But I would like to know the day-to-day of Maru on the station with Dukat. I would like to see that explored as well, even without Nerys being involved at all. What was really going on for her? All right. Well, we're going to wrap this one up, a little bit shorter orb than in the past, but Kira Maru is not the only thing we've been discussing here on the network recently, so here's a quick look at some of our other shows.
Previously on Trek.fm, to the journey! He tweets out, you know, like, hey, walking around with my mobile emitter, you know, hashtag blessed. You know, it's just, I'm sure that's what he's doing.
Oh, gosh. Yep, he's taking photos of his holographic non-dinner.
The 602 Club.
And even the book started this way, and I remember reading the book and being like, what the F is going on? Because it's just such a strange scene, you know, this muggle caretaker in this house making tea, and you're like, what is happening? But really what's being set up is this bookend of Voldemort looming over everything and finally finding a way to return.
Stage 9, a podcast about the people who make Star Trek.
Every chance they have to get him off the bridge of that ship and have him running around on some planet or shooting some guy or jumping on something, they do. And it's like, he's got that chair there, it looks really comfortable, let's have him sit in it for a while and command a starship.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. We have so many shows on so many topics, and of course we have one dedicated to every Star Trek series, including the animated series. You can find these everywhere that you get your podcasts. The two biggest places are iTunes, where we have an artist section as a featured content provider. Just go to itunes.com/trekfm to find that. And also Google Play Music. You can look us up in the app on Android. Another great way. Of course, you can also go to our website, trek.fm, and you'll find everything over there. While you're in iTunes, please take a moment and leave us a star rating and a written review. That really helps us out. And if you'd like to support what we're doing here on the network, you can help us out through Patreon at patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. Everything you need to know is right there on the site. I'd also like to take a moment and thank our associate producers here on The Orb, Ruth Ward, Ken Tripp, William Murray, and Kay Elizabeth Janeway. Thank you so much, Ruth, Ken, William, and Kay, for helping us keep the show going and keep the network going. You can also become an associate producer at patreon.com. Just go check it out over there. Now, Matthew, if people want to find you here in the present day, when you're not having an orb vision with the orb of time, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, it's gotten so hard to tell where I am these days or if I'm tweeting from the future or the past, but you can try me out at MattRushing02 on Twitter. You can also find me on the network doing Literary Treks with Dan and Bruce. We're talking about the books and the comics of Star Trek. Also a lot of times get to interview the authors about their latest works, which is a lot of fun, so make sure you check that out. And honestly, just a great place to spend the 50th anniversary of Star Trek and some great Star Trek books or comics. In fact, you'll be so shocked about this, but we just recently covered some of the original Deep Space Nine comics.
Oh, I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, and they were actually good. So you're going to want to go check out that show.
And Kira looked like Kira.
Yeah.
She didn't look like Bear Claw from the TOS comics or anything like that.
No, luckily, she did not look like Bear Claw. You can also, of course, find me on our General Geek Show, the 602 Club, talking about all things geeky. We've got so many great franchises to talk about, so many great things to talk about. We have a wonderful time over there, so I hope you'll do that. And, of course, doing aggressive negotiations with John Mills about Star Wars, and you can find that on iTunes under Aggressive Negotiations. Now, Chris, when you're not trying to find out exactly which Bajoran monastery actually has the Orb of Time so that you can have an experience, where can we find you?
It is tough. That's why I go to emissary.com. They have a wonderful map there that shows you where all the orbs are located on Bajor.
Oh, man, that's cool. I want to go to emissary.com. I mean, you just type in your question, you get an answer. It's awesome.
It's awesome. I mean, the search function, it's kind of slow. But the great thing about it is while you're waiting for it to retrieve the results, they play music of the emissary playing piano and singing. So...
yeah, it's that's wonderful. And if you get the upgraded package, they also serve you spring wine. It just immediately downloads into your replicator.
It is amazing stuff you can do when you have replicator technology. So now, when I'm not doing that, you can find me elsewhere on the network doing The Ready Room, where we talk about all 5 live-action Star Trek series. We rotate through those. We occasionally have other special topics. And we also have a news segment. And then you can find my writing about Star Trek over on the official website at StarTrek.com. And you can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C and Brian with a Y. Search that name actually on StarTrek.com to find my articles because they publish so much stuff over there. It gets pushed down pretty quickly. And on Facebook, that's my username there as well. And if you want to leave us your general thoughts on what we talked about today, if you want to contact Matthew and me together, well, first of all, Facebook, the Babel Conference is a great place. That's our listeners group. It is a closed group, so you'll need to click join and then we'll let you in. But you'll find that over there by typing Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field. It should come up. That's called the Babel Conference. You can also send us an email by going to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form there. Choose to send to a show and choose the orb. That'll come to Matthew and me both. And also, you can leave us a voicemail if you'd like if you go to speakpipe.com/trekfm. Last thing really quickly here, I'd like to invite everybody to get your own spring wine t-shirt or other great Trek FM merchandise because that helps us keep the network going. You'll find that by going to trekfm.store. That's the URL, trekfm.store. And that'll take you right on over to our store on Redbubble. We have so many great designs over there, including the Orb Spring Wine Company.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. And we'll see you next time as we gaze into the orb.